Attention, please. Please do not smoke in the terminal building. Smoking is only permitted in the specified smoking areas. Thank you.
Over the last few episodes, we've been talking about how identity affects our spirituality, or how spirituality itself affects our identity. We've looked at the topic from the perspective of language with Ukwako Kanyagute, and how language shapes our view and our understanding of spirituality, especially for us today who are witnessing how our culture and our languages are evolving right in front of our eyes. The more I spoke to Ukwako, the more it became clear that language was a function of identity more than it was something that stood on its own. And the more I thought about it, the more I realized that I don't fully understand what is meant by identity. So I spoke to Ubanele Rewu in the last episode about what is it that we as Black South Africans define as our identity. And what I got from that episode and the topic is that we as Black South Africans have an identity that is in many ways something that was created for us instead of by us. Before colonization, Southern Africa, in fact, all of Africa, was made up of different tribes living in different parts of the continent. During colonization, borders were put up right around us, and the names of countries were shoved down our collective throats, consequently ascribing to us nationalities based on the whims of thieves and oppressors. This foundation was a breeding ground for what I believe is a big reason why we are so conflicted in our spirituality, because there is an underlying assumption that we as South Africans, or at least Black South Africans, have a kind of collective or unified form of spiritual practice and belief. Beyond that, what we describe as our identity is largely rooted in our social and economic circumstances. To be Black and South African is to be economically disadvantaged. It is to live in a country that was specifically designed to make sure that me and people like me are perpetually living in dysfunction. I can't be umXhosa and be South African at the same time. Not entirely. I cannot be Motswana and be South African at the same time. Not entirely. At some point, in one way or another, I have to leave out fundamental aspects of these identities in order to function within the system of the country. It could be language, it could be customs, rituals, or beliefs. I cannot embrace all of these fully and completely in my day-to-day life in South Africa. After giving this some thought, and after a brief conversation with Ukwako Mahlodi, it led me to think that what happens to a person's identity when they don't live within the circumstances of what they define as their identity? What happens to your identity as a Black South African when you no longer live within the social, economic, or political, or even the cultural norms and the criminal violence that defines so much of who we believe we are in the country? If you are a Black South African who is or has been living abroad for some time, how do you define who you are? To get some perspective on this, I spoke to a few South Africans who are currently living in other countries to try to understand what their lived experiences have been and how being away affects how they see and engage with their sense of identity. I figured that this topic would need more than one person, and also it cannot be tackled from a strictly spiritual perspective, so I will be doing a mini-series talking to different people from different countries. I'm not sure exactly how many episodes there will be, but I think it's going to be very interesting. I do have to apologize in advance for sound quality because the recordings were made via virtual meeting, so the sound isn't as great as I would have liked it to be, so I sincerely apologize for that. For this series, the very first person I spoke to was Lerato Shadi. She is a visual and performance artist whose work challenges common assumptions to critique Western notions of history and make visible that which is invisible or overlooked. She works across video, performance, and installations. Lerato was born in Mahikeng in the Northwest, South Africa, and now lives and works in Berlin, Germany. How does language affect spirituality, and then which moved on to how does identity affect spirituality. But now it's sort of become more and more clear as to when I say identity, I'm making an assumption about something. When I say how does it affect identity, because then what do I mean by identity? You know, because identity itself is not a set thing. You know, for different people. And for example, for us in the country as Black people, we have a tendency of defining ourselves according to our hardships, right? Where Black people were struggling, the township life, the construct of apartheid. But the reality is that our hardships were manufactured, right? It's not our lot in life. It's not we are here because, you know, we made bad decisions or we are a sort of a lesser people. Our realities are actually manufactured. So it kind of, if you understand it in that way, it sort of does imply that our identity was manufactured. And it sort of then begs the question, how complicit are we in creating that identity? Or did we just inherit it and we are living up to it? So I wanted to understand from the perspective of someone who is not living directly under the circumstances that we have come to define as our identity. If someone who is South African but not living under that construct, how do you then deal with identity? Because for us, you know, there are certain universal themes, especially for Black people, for Black women, that things that are sort of universal in some way. And I am assuming, right? These are assumptions that I'm hoping that we're going to clear up. So that's the general idea behind this episode, to sort of try to understand what constitutes an identity, and what happens when we have our identity as South Africans, which is a geographic identity. What happens when you're not in that geographic setting and under those social, economic, and historical structures that define us as Black South Africans? What are you then outside of that? So that's the general idea. So to start off with, where do you live?
I live in Berlin. Mm-hmm. In Wedding.
And how long
it's
have
called
you been
It's Wedding. It's called
Wedding.
Wedding.
Really?
Mm. It's spelled Wedding, but it's okay. I think it's pronounced Wedding. I've been living here. I tell myself the truth, but I don't normally say the truth out loud to people. Mm-hmm. But I've been living here for 10 years.
Okay, why the reluctance in saying?
I don't know. I'm normally like, I've been here maybe 8 years. I don't know why. I'm just like, I think okay. It's the idea of, I haven't been away for that long. I don't know.
The issue is not how long you've been there, but how long you've been away from here.
I think so. Yeah. I think it's, yeah. I think the question for me is exactly that. It just reminds me of how long I've been away from home instead of how long I've been here.
Okay. And okay, so then.
Also, I don't feel like I've been away from home. Also, okay. It's a bit weird because these are issues and relocating is always like a schlep. And I feel like it took me at least a year, maybe about 2 years to feel like, okay, I'm here. I got my residency permit this year,
mm-hmm.
which is like an ID card. Before that, I had the 5-year visa. I'm married to a Swiss person, so technically I was living in Switzerland.
Okay.
For like a few years. Then mm-hmm. technically, like on paper, we're still in Berlin, but on paper we were in Switzerland. And then when we moved the papers to Berlin, then I think I've been in Berlin officially maybe for 8 years. Okay. It's complicated. In Europe, when you move in, when you arrive, you have to tell them where you are.
Okay.
Like, you know, at home, if you move from like, I'm from Mafeking. If I moved from Mafeking and I lived in Johannesburg, in Europe, you have to announce that you're now living in Johannesburg.
You announce to who?
To the local people. And another nice thing, he calls it reparations, is that I never have to deal with that. Because my partner speaks German, he does all the paperwork for me. And it was his words, actually, where he was like, it's reparations that I have to go through all this schlep. And,
yeah.
And it's also for him the idea that I shouldn't, since we're in a partnership, I should not be the only one who's going through that hurdle. He should know how it feels like
Okay, we're gonna get back to that. Why did you leave?
A number of reasons. One, I've been thinking about it actually maybe the last week or 2 weeks, is also that I don't know why I started thinking about it, that in high school, when everyone was talking about what do you want to be when you grow up, I saw a little cartoon clip where kids were being asked, what do you want to be when you grow up? And some kids were like, a fireman, a policeman, this. And another kid was like, happy. I was like, yeah, that's me. I want to be happy. So I never really knew what I wanted to be when I grew up. At some point in standard 8, I thought I wanted to be an artist, but saw no chance of me becoming an artist. So I just buried that idea somewhere deep down in my heart or my subconscious. But somehow, in those moments when I was alone with myself, I never voiced it out to anyone, but I saw me moving north. I was like, I'm going.
Yeah.
But I also, like art, I didn't acknowledge it. It was just a feeling where I'm like, I'm being crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But every now and then there'd be moments where I knew I wanted to move.
Yeah.
I was talking to my partner about it a couple of days ago, that one of the first times that I realized that people think differently from me, or where I felt it viscerally, the moment that I really remember is I was in Cape Town talking to a stranger, basically, somebody I didn't know, and I never spoke to that person after that. And I was telling him that I am in Cape Town for like in service training, and I'd visited Durban before with my family, and I asked him if he's ever gone, if he's traveled in South Africa, and he said he's only traveled around the coast and he has no interest in traveling inland. I was like, what? He's like, yeah, I want to be on the coast. I have no dreams of being in a place that doesn't have an ocean. Yeah. And that was like really, that hit me hard. I was like, wow, there really are people who think differently from me and who have no desire, who don't have the same traveling desires that I do. And that was nice in a way. I'm like, oh, that's really nice. And then it also made me understand, maybe there's also some people who also don't actually want to travel outside their zones. Yeah. I'm like, I'm fine here.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that it's something that we should have a desire to travel?
No, I think freedom of movement is a human right, but I think that there's so much diversity that it's maybe thinking that everyone should have the desire to move is potentially problematic.
Okay.
I think that everyone should have the right to travel, which is different from should have the desire.
I get what you mean. When you mentioned that it took you about a year or so to sort of settle in.
But also, that's not why I moved. I also moved because South Africa is South Africa. And, you know, I also feel like the big difference between being in Berlin and in South Africa is that in South Africa, I see the racism and the structural inequality and all that you were talking about everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
My mother lives in Jeredina, which is a township. I see it there. My grandmother lives in Mafikeng, Komahaeng. Like, I see all of that. If I'm in Johannesburg, I see it. I feel like it doesn't matter where I am in Cape Town. You see, I'm confronted with all of that. And then at one point, I was doing some work in Cape Town and some incident happened with a couple of white people. And 2 years later, my anger level was at the same height as it was when it first happened. And I'm like, this is so unhealthy. Mm-hmm. And it just also added fuel to the fire of me wanting to move. And also when I finished studying my postgrad, I didn't want to do my master's immediately because I was like, I want to do my master's outside the country.
Okay.
And I always thought that that can become a good excuse to leave the country. Also because I only thought, there's a couple of people that I knew that had left to study overseas, and I'm like, that's a viable way to kind of experience life outside of South Africa.
And once you got there, what are the three things that you can think of the top of your head that stood out in the new country when you arrived that was more different than you expected?
Okay, so I live in Berlin, but I feel like Switzerland made me choose Berlin, that there would be no Berlin for me without Switzerland.
Okay.
Because my first, I'd done like 10 day stunts out of the country. My first big amount of time outside the country was 3 months. And I spent a month, the first month of those 3 months in Switzerland, I spent in Bern, whatever. And it's it's two things that I'm thinking of. Well, within the first week of being in Bern, no, I think it was either the first week or first 2 weeks. I remember just walking around for like 3 days, feeling like something was off.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, yeah, this country's rich from, you know, like the blood of people, but that's not it. You know, like from Nazi money, warlord money. Yeah, mm-hmm. but that's not the thing that's off. I just kept feeling like something, and not in a necessarily bad way. It's just, it was off. And I couldn't figure it out. And I always remember where I was when I figured out what the off thing was. And what was off was that I didn't have my crocodile skin on me anymore. Like living in Johannesburg, you have to be constantly vigilant and hard.
Wow.
And somewhere it had fallen off. And that's the thing that was off, because I felt so safe. I mean, I was going to say,
were you feeling vulnerable?
No, I was physically safe. I mean, I was a black person in a white country, yes, but I didn't have that hardness. Like, you have to be vigilant. Somebody might come at you, or if you're walking down the street, or it's other things that were softer, but that Joburg hardness had somehow fallen off. And that was
wow. That
was really interesting. And then after a month, Bern is so safe and so clean and so perfect, very boring. I hadn't been to Berlin, so I was like, I need to get out of here. And I had enough of a stipend so that I decided to come to Berlin for 10 days because I hadn't been here before. And when I got off at Warschauerstrasse, I was so happy. I felt like I could breathe. I was like, yes, graffiti. The graffiti in Switzerland is so apologetic. It's so nice. It's so perfect. It's at the right place. It just annoyed me a little bit. So I got to Bern and the graffiti was like giving you the middle finger. There was like glass on the street, there were drunk people, I was walking on the bicycle road and people were screaming at me. I'm like, oh, again,
and that
it's like
you more comfortable.
It's life, yes.
Wow. It's interesting to say that you actually sought out some level of grime and discomfort to feel more comfortable, because the other place was, I suppose, more too clinical.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I know. That's why I feel like there wouldn't be. Switzerland made.
Yeah.
Gave me.
This for me is surprising, is that from the outside, I would assume that if you were trying to get away from the realities of the country, you'd want to be in a country that was completely devoid of anything that reminds you of South Africa.
But here's the thing. In my story, I also feel like it's mine. It's not everyone else's. That's why I was like earlier, I don't know if this talk is going to be very helpful to you, because a lot of the times I'll be like, I don't know. And for me, I'm very much aware that things are also particular to me. Even though I'm in Berlin now, I have a couple of black friends who have moved outside of Berlin, who lived in Berlin and they moved. So I mentioned Portugal. My friend Toby, who is absolutely fantastic and is a trauma therapist and has a skincare product that also works with healing trauma in the body. Anyway, she moved to Portugal from Berlin because Berlin was too much for her. And then I have other friends who moved to London back home to London because Berlin was too much for them. And
too
I
much
understand.
In what way? Too much.
It's too dark most of the time. It's mm-hmm. really cold. The first impression of people is really rude and aggressive. And then mm-hmm. maybe later on they mellow out. It's just, I know that I have an easier time also because I'm light skinned, but if you're more dark skinned, you also have different reactions. But it's also because a lot of the times I read as African American, I have a mm-hmm. I have a tailor who I've told her twice I'm South African. She's like, "You're African American." I'm like, "No, I'm South African." And she's like, "Africa?" I'm like, "Yes, South Africa." She's you lied. You don't look African. Again, when I go back, same conversation. So yeah. I'm aware that I might have it easier because I don't read.
I actually have that question on my notes, but it's one of those extra questions. Like, if I run out of questions, ask that, because I didn't know how comfortable it would be to ask that, because it has been on my mind when I was going through your profile. I'm like, okay, you are a light-skinned person, and I wonder if that carries any weight or carries any influence when you are abroad, because I'm not sure how colorism is treated, especially in Europe, when it comes to black people and white people.
I mean, I also don't think I can speak directly to it. I'm not even sure I can speak to my own experiences, because the thing about privilege is that you're not aware of it. Mm-hmm. So, but I do know that being in South Africa, my yellow boneness or light skinnedness, or even as mm-hmm. a kid, mm-hmm. being told that I am pretty because I'm light-skinned. Not that I'm pretty, just because I'm light-skinned, I'm pretty. And being sensitive towards that. And my favorite aunt is called the dark-skinned one in the family. I'm like, but you're not even that dark-skinned. And I don't know what that has to do with anything. So even in South Africa, I'm aware of that. And I also know that in South Africa, I also read as colored. And I know that coloredness brings with it its own privileges in black spaces. Yeah. So maybe having that helps me be aware of it here mm-hmm. as well. So mm-hmm. they definitely, I think I could stand corrected if other people have different experiences, but I think I understand it here as my reading as American gives me privilege. My being read as American gives me privilege.
Yeah, sure.
If that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense, because we tend to believe that the colorism thing is something. Yeah, it does stem from colonialism, but it's something that is being used within the South African context, or in the context where there's black people, like in America and in South Africa. But then you wouldn't necessarily, well, personally, I didn't think that in Europe it would be a factor in the sense that there are a lot more white people. And I don't know to which extent European white people are cognizant or conscious of color, skin tone variations when it comes to black people, and that you would treat these ones differently to these ones, because you, for white people, you're either black or you're not.
I think my being red as American means that I have economic privilege. So being dark skinned, then I would translate it as being connected to the people that come in on boats, and then as those are immigrants, and then you have expats, so refugees and people who
asylum seekers,
and
I don't know, what do they call the people from the Ukraine?
Don't call them refugees. That's a whole podcast on its own. Can we please?
Okay. All right. We will skip it for now.
Yes.
Yes. For now, Omotswana, right?
Mm.
Omotswana. What has been your relationship with that culture in your life, from growing up? And what I mean by that is, na, I am technically umXhosa, but I grew up in Joburg. I grew up totally outside of that language and that culture. So I don't have a, historically from in my life, I don't have a healthy relationship with the culture that I am told that I'm born into. So I carry a different kind of identity. So my relationship with my culture is something that I am learning much later in life. So in your personal history, when you were here, what was your relationship with being Motswana? Is it something that you were totally immersed in, or was it something that was distant from you?
I mean, even here, I'm still Motswana. People are living on a stone.
Mm-hmm.
But I think from that, the biggest sore point for me, and also why I use Setswana in my work, is that I really am uncomfortable, is for lack of a better word. The funny thing, when we speak about language, I usually say that language is not my first language. A big sore point for me is that I'm more comfortable with English than I am in Setswana, and that I can express myself far more easily and can read and write far more easily in English than I can in Setswana. And I think it has to do with that. I started going to Model C schools, I think, when I was like 8 years old. So it's that classic Ngugi wa Thongo story where I wasn't allowed to speak my language, you would get punished, you were asked to...
Yes.
All of that. And then it's around the time when all the grown-ups were convinced that English is the future, it's better to learn English. So there's a big sense of lack and loss within that that space. Mare, kuhai re Batswana, re bua Setswana, obviously mixed Lesotho.
You know what this brings to mind for me is this thing that culture is supposed to be pure, right? That how le Motswana, there has to be some kind of purity to Botswana ba gago. You know, there has to be, if you are umZulu, there has to be some purity to it. And now we're in a situation where we are not really sure what cultural purity means. In the sense that if I'm speaking less of a language, am I less pure in that culture? And if I'm less pure, does it mean that I am lesser of that culture? You know. So when you're speaking about, you know, how the shift, at the very least, the linguistic shift started in primary school, I wonder then, was it also where a culture shift in identity also started?
I actually don't know if I have an identity culture shift or what that means and how to track it, because one is always growing. And I find the ideas of purity quite violent in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. For me, they remind me of this humanistic thing that white people do, you know, that the human is white and then everyone else is a lesser degree of a white man. Mm-hmm. White woman.
So it's like a spectrum from white to black.
Yes. There's like black being white on the, man. Yeah. Bessie Head in Marvel. It's about a Mosawa woman. And I think this, the book is written from her point of view, and it's And she speaks about how the white man can look down on the black man and say, at least I'm not that. The black man can look down on the, I think like on the Mosawa and say, at least I'm not that. There's no one for the Mosawa to look down on and say, at least I'm not that. Something to that effect. I'm horridly misquoting it. So ideas of purity, it brings that to mind for me, and that it becomes easy to knock people off the human table. Like we are pure human Zoanas, and you are less so. And then I also, for me, think that it goes into this, it plays into this thing, Makalat, mixed race, half this, half that. It's also just, it feels wrong to call a human half anything.
So what do you think is the value of culture or its purpose if we believe that we have to be, you have to be what you are? How le Motswana, you have to be Motswana. Ma umZulu, you have to be umZulu.
Do you really?
I'm literally thinking out loud as I'm saying.
Because for me, I would say that the value of culture would be to bring us together. I'm really convinced that diversity is our strength, not our weakness. I think that we have a lack of imagination when it comes to how diverse we are and how magnificent as humans we are. And I feel like we get trapped into thinking in a very Western way. I have this thesis that the Caucasian way, or the Western way, not even the Caucasian way, maybe the Western way of thinking is, I think, therefore I am, which is very individualistic. And then I think an indigenous way, not even just an African way, but more an indigenous way is, I am because you are. All of that, which is more inclusive. And I think that when we pull that thread even more, there's more of that that's happening. So the Western way is, the Earth is dead, the same way that Mars is dead. So we can send robots on it and dig it up and put a flag on it and own it. Or the Earth is dead, so we can dig up the oil, dig up this exhaust, you know, use it, consume it. When indigenous way of thinking is, the earth is alive, the earth is our mother, the earth is breathing, we are in relation with the earth, we take care of the earth.
So you are very aware then of the whole, you know, more indigenous way of viewing the world and self, and the Western way of you viewing the world and self. So when you are in Berlin, how do you navigate the sense of community, or how do you navigate the idea of building community? Because one of the things that I assume when you are away from home is not just being away from community. So now you're in an environment, in a society where that is inherently individualistic. Whereas with us, we are into gatherings, we're into big gatherings. So how have you then dealt with the need, the inherent need for community in a place that may not necessarily define community according along the lines that you define it as?
That's also a really interesting question. Another one which I don't have an interesting answer to, because it's taken me a while to understand that I'm basically an introvert who's also a hermit. Like, I have absolutely no problem with being at home for a week without stepping outside the door. None whatsoever.
Do you think your introvertedness has helped with you being able to live as long as you have, or to rather to be in that country as long as you have, as opposed to if you were a more social person who was struggling to fit in?
Most definitely, I think so. Yeah. A lot of the times, especially for like the first maybe 5 years or so, maybe even more, I'm embarrassed to say maybe even 7 years. I just felt like I needed the cave that is Berlin. Mm-hmm. It felt like a cave.
Yeah.
You know, like dark and cold and like incubating. I felt like I needed the caveness. And also it goes back to what I said about being so angry for 2 years. And mm-hmm. there were also some personal traumas that had happened that really, besides that one, like some other ones that were quite hectic. And to a certain extent, that was also part of me running away from home.
Okay.
Not that home, but running away from something so that I can deal with them. So it was good for me personally to be away from a certain space so that I wasn't toxic is not the word. It's in that violent is a better word. In sort of like this violent mix.
Yeah.
I'm also being, I'm trying to be honest without exposing my own story in an unnecessary way. So, so that helped for me to be away. I definitely wouldn't say to people, hey, you need to leave South Africa. You need to come to Berlin. You need to, no.
Why not?
I think we all have different journeys. I think we are all different people. And I think people generally know what they need to do for themselves. When we sit down and we're honest enough, it's not easy, but somehow.
Yeah. So I want to talk more about your work. You deal a lot with in your work as a performance artist. Is that the mm-hmm. right term to use? In your work as a performance artist, you deal a lot with the idea of erasure.
Yeah.
Why is the idea of erasure so personal to you?
I guess I feel, it's personal and it's historical. In a personal way, I feel like the erasure of my femininity and, not femininity, femininity is something different, of maybe the female body is a better way to say it, or a feminized body might be a better way to say it. The violation and erasures of feminized bodies and also identifying as black and like those erasures. And I think also the work you're talking about is possibly Seredise, which it was around the time that I was being asked to do something by some people who were like, you claim to be quite open, but your proposal is very dismissive and like erases, you know. You have lots of those in different institutions where they talk the talk, but they don't walk the walk. And I was also really struck by how I knew more about the Western, especially English queens, than I did about there are many queens from the continent, which is huge compared mm-hmm. to England. So, and I was interested in ideas of how I was complicit in my own subjugation.
What do you mean by that?
I meant that I was like, yeah, I don't know it, but why don't I still know it now? Which is why a part of the work is like, you contemplate the wall and then you pick a name to enact violence on by erasing it. But in doing that, you are hopefully committing to finding out who is the person you just erased. Because I don't give any information. Mm-hmm. So then mm-hmm. we do the other part of undoing that violence by taking the small step of re-educating yourself. So I was like, yeah, then it's also my responsibility to educate myself. It's like, yes, I have the story of violence, but what's my responsibility? It doesn't mean I'm living every day.
The thing, one piece that caught my attention was Mosako Wanako, where you spent 10 days in the first installation, 10 days sitting on a chair, knitting, crocheting.
Six hours a day, no break.
And you basically knit, I can't say crocheted, knitted.
It's easier to say knitted, but it's crocheting. It's crocheting.
Okay.
I always say knit. Although
you had a giant ball of red wool.
Yeah.
And you weaved what seemingly looks like a red river in that. And what caught me about it was that you were sitting in this room in a European city surrounded by European people.
No.
And it's even more yes?
No. So when I first performed it, I performed it in Berlin at Hohe Berliner Kunst. Only the last 3 hours are in public. The whole 9 days before, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., I think that's the 6 hours, I was knitting. It was also a public a group show. So while the crew of the new Berliner Kunst were setting up the installation, I was knitting. I was also sitting and setting up my installation. And the reason why I didn't perform for the 10 days is that I didn't want to perform for white people. I didn't want to perform the 10 days. The curators asked me to do the public thing, and then I was like, okay, that I'll do that, but I can finish it. And I didn't finish it towards the end. I finished it if the show ended at 10, I think I finished at 8, something like that.
What was your reluctance? Yes.
And then the second time I did it was in, it's not called the National Arts Festival anymore, in Grahamstown. It's not called Grahamstown. I did it there.
It's just the National Arts Festival.
Yes, I did it for the National Arts Festival. And at the National Arts Festival, I performed it for those 10 days. And we actually printed out posters and put them in taxi ranks. And we were like, this is a show you can come and see for free. So there I wanted to perform it for black people. But here I was like, mm-mm.
I get such a sense of, I almost want to say conflict, but it maybe it's more of...
It is conflict, yes, I guess.
Because it's like, wow, like you...
Yes.
Yeah, it's a lot of conflict that you have to go through to do your work and be where you are.
But that's not just in Europe, that's also in South Africa. The sense of conflict, that is. I think it's different, yes. But it's still there. I actually want to come back to the pure Motswana and Tswana thing. So I identify as Tswana, the Motswana. I also take my mother's lineage. Papaka Haetsa, what is this thing? He didn't officially claim me. And then it's a tricky relationship. So I don't take his lineage. I think I'm Motswana, but I'm not sure. Anyway, I identify as Tswana, take my mother's lineage, which means it's my grandfather's lineage. And then I always knew that when my grandfather got like excited, he would speak Sesotho, and I'd be like, this guy thinks he's fancy. Bona. I'm not about to go Sesotho. And then I did my family tree. And then I found out, oh, we're actually Sotho. I was like, oh, that's why the person spoke in Sotho. And I know that my grandmother is, she spoke Zulu, but my grandmother is Swati. She always said, give us Swati. I still need to do that family tree.
Mm-hmm.
So, in a way, Kimotswana, yes, but I'm also aware that I have other lineages. Mm-hmm. Like, I always felt like Kinale lineage Bazulu. But my grandmother, I know she's very proud of being Moswati.
Okay.
So it feels like those are parts of me, even though I don't necessarily identify as them.
In the work that you do, and I'm not sure if this is me reading something into it that is not there, but there seems to be a lot of yearning for home of some kind, or yes, some version of home.
Yeah, I think that's true.
And I think it goes back to the earlier point about how conflicted your work seems and how you are navigating the world, in that you left consciously, deliberately, mm-hmm, yet your work sort of wants to keep coming back. Or is it not coming back? Is it more of preserving your understanding of it wherever you are?
But I don't feel like I left. I think, mm-hmm, leaving implies the never coming back. I come home at least once a year, except in the pandemic.
Yeah.
It's just, home is an interesting one, because even before I moved from South Africa, home, I would always say that home is wherever I lay my head. And I think that has to do with like some personal history. Very young, I was like, Lokakane is home, and then I had to move to Klerksdorp, and that move was really, in a way, especially the way it was done, because my mom didn't know better, which is fine, was really traumatic. I cried for a week when I moved to Klerksdorp. So that place never felt like home, plus other reasons. And then Johannesburg felt like a chosen home. And that also made me understand that I can always choose where, for me, I can choose where home is. Mm-hmm. But having said that, home is in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand what I mean?
I understand. I understand I want to say the somersaults you have to sort of do, a few gymnastic moves over filters, you know, over some kind of that, there's that, there's that, and then there's the other thing, and that's how I get home.
Yes, and it's also complicated, because it's right now we are talking about feelings.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about my feelings and my sense of identity and my sense, I don't even know what identity means. I told you language is not my first language. It's like this thing that I know. Mm-hmm. And when someone who is more eloquent with words comes and says it, I'd be like, yes, that's it. Or if they say something that's not that, I can be like, no, it's not that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and maybe that's why it's complicated. And yes, they're like all these different filters. And for me, I feel like the filters are what makes us, or what makes me me, and human. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that people, actually my partner is like, is Swiss, and his family tree is like 1600 or something ridiculous, like something proper ridiculous, just Switzerland. Like unimaginably ridiculously long. And also you just have buildings in Europe that are longer than the Republic of South Africa. So what I know of me is like it's a lot of things. It's
when you come back, when you visit, when you do your annual trip, what do you notice? Do you ever notice any changes, or does home always feel like the home you've always known from the time you were young?
I always go to the same place, which is my grandmother's place. Mm-hmm. And that's that has always changed. Like they bought the house from a long time ago from some white person who was moving, and then there was always like things being added. At some point I remember counting 16 doors, and there were like two windows inside the house, like windows.
Wow.
And I thought it was normal.
Yeah.
Until I started being like, yeah.
You can't have a window inside the house.
Yeah, that means this was an outside and then it just got extended. Yeah. So, and then this house started falling, and what my grandmother did is she built a border around the house and started dismantling it from the inside. Like, this was the original wall. She would build another wall here.
So she built the house around the house.
And then she dismantled it. But then that was also not so weird, because I remember one time the roof was falling. I think I was in my teenagers, and I loved the moment of standing in the TV room looking up and looking at the sky. I'm inside the house and looking at the sky, and I'm like, this is, I know this is supposed to be tragic, but it's so beautiful. Mm-hmm. That's how it's always been for me, like just moving, not static.
So it doesn't give you a sense of your memory being eroded away, in that every time you go, there's less and less of the thing that you identify with?
No, because it's always, I grew up with it moving.
Mm-hmm.
As my mother's house in Klerksdorp, it's the same way as it was when it was built.
Okay.
That's not my grandmother's house.
So that's not a place that you are spiritually connected to.
My mother's house.
Your grandmother's house. So I mean your mother's house. Yes.
Yes. No, but I am to my grandmother's house, and it still feels like I'm connected to it, even though it moves.
Are you a spiritual person?
I
know that's a very loaded question.
Yeah, I think you can ask me questions and I'll tell you yes or no. I am, I guess. I mean, I light a candle every time I get into the studio.
Mm-hmm.
I try doing an ancestral corner. I'm not very good at it. It keeps shifting. It's not mm-hmm. there yet. Mm-hmm. I try to meditate often. I fail at it often.
Is it something you grew up with?
My grandmother's very religious. Mm-hmm. But it's also a kind of personal. She would basically just say, you need to go to church. We all need to have a church. She says, I have to go to church. You know, the thing about being here, she was like, do you have a church? And because I meditate, I'd be like, yes, I went to church. And I meditated. So basically, that's kind of like church. I'm not fully lying. I'm not fully telling the truth.
Do you feel that you are being you as a person and have and carrying the history that you're carrying as a Motswana woman from Mafikeng, a black woman born during apartheid, growing up, spending some time in the country? Do you feel like you represent something when you're in Berlin?
It's a loaded question. At the beginning of making art, it was also in South Africa, in the art world, within the span of, I don't know how long I've been making art, maybe 15 years, I don't know. A lot of it, mostly white people would be like, oh, this is you as a black woman doing this, you as a black woman doing that. And I was like, I don't necessarily identify as a black woman, identify as a person. But then I also was like, it's important for me not to negate my womanness and my blackness, so I will take it on. A very good friend of mine, Joan Lekhalamitla, is the same age as me, grew up in Mafikeng, but had a different story to mine. But I also can't speak for her because she has her own voice. My story of moving is not necessarily her story. I'm cautious of representing black mm-hmm. women from South Africa or from wherever. I'm like,
when you look at the news about South Africa, what comes to your mind when you look at what's happening in the country?
I haven't been looking at the news in general for a while. I'm interested in my own personal journey and in our journeys as black people being parallel, in that you mentioned it earlier that we define ourselves with our problems.
Mm.
And I'm curious about how what you focus you when you're walking, when you are walking, you walk in the direction of what you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
So I am trying to find other things to look at. And also because I feel like the news, to actually find out what is happening, not just about South Africa, but about any topic in the world, I would have to do so much research on one thing
mm-hmm.
to actually get to the point.
A balanced view.
Yeah, like most of the time if I'm reading something, I'm like, but you didn't tell me anything. You're just sensationalizing. What's the backstory? Why are they toy-toying? People don't just get on the street and why? What led to that? What is, give me okay. context, give me information. And the thing that really gets to me is like, a lot of the times when I read things, I'm like, I just got upset. I didn't get any information, but fuel to make me anxious and angry.
And triggered,
yes. And I would like to like get some information. That's also another reason why I was like, and I also saw a lot of different small things. I'm like, I don't want to have to spend a whole day reading a whole lot of things to get to some kind of maybe balanced information. And a lot of the times when I would cross read things, I'm like, they're just repeating each other. There's still nothing. There's still nothing new in this. So there is that, and there is also the idea of how do we tell a different story? So if I tell the story of me as like all this story that I was trying not to tell you about the traumas and whatever, like repeating that, how does that keep me in that mentality?
Mm-hmm.
How do I create a different story for myself? Who do I want to be? And that's a really tricky question. because a lot of the times it's so much easier to know what we're against. It's a little bit harder to know what we're for.
Do you see yourself ever moving back permanently?
Yes.
After this conversation, my understanding of what identity is has become even more vague than when I started, and I'm really not sure how I feel about that. For one thing, it seems that identity is far more fluid than we would like to believe, and also it is far more nuanced than we think. But for me, it is the fluidity that is almost unnerving, frightening even. It's like it's not cast in stone, and that leaves a strange sense of uncertainty that I'm not really sure where to place it and even why I feel it. There's really a lot to this that I can't really put into words right now, but I'd really like to hear your thoughts on it. My name is Wasom Zinlande. Thank you so very much for joining me on yet another episode of The Journey Quantum. Thank you for tuning in. I appreciate all the feedback, and I appreciate you taking the time to listen. It really means a lot to me. I wish you light, I wish you courage, and I wish you all the very best on your journey. Makwande.